Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Zero Center for Arts and Education opened a new exhibit devoted to contemporary portraiture earlier this month. Painted Faces features 10 contemporary artists working with portraiture in varied and unusual ways. They range from an almost abstract version of portraiture by British master Frank Auerbach and German-American artist David Stern to the photorealism of Robert Bauer and the traditional portraiture of longtime Kansas City Art Institute teacher Wilbur Niewald. My guest today is the curator of the show and a noted local artist and painter himself, Mark Lewis. Lewis is an applied associate professor of art at the University of Tulsa and also the director of the Alexander Hogue Gallery. He joins us today to talk about Painted Faces, which is on display at the Zero Center for Arts and Education, that's in the Brady District, through April 20th. Mark Lewis, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. Nice to be here.
Tell us about this show you curated for the Zero Center. It's Painted Faces. It's 10 contemporary figurative portrait painters, and at least this is an aspect of their work. Tell us about these artists and how you found them and how the show came about.
Well, I've been thinking about this show for 3 or 4 years now, and I've always thought about trying to bring a group of figurative painters or people that work with the human head together for a show. And I'd taken my students to the home of a local collector, and he had a Frank Auerbach painting. So, and this was about 2 years ago. I thought, well, gee, wouldn't it be nice to curate a show sort of centered around a Frank Auerbach painting? Because he's a wonderful English painter. He's a very well-known and established artist. And I love his work, and it was great to show the students his work. But I thought this would be a chance to bring his work to the public and to pull together a group of artists around that painting.
And he doesn't show, and I don't think he's a part of the collections in this part of the country. He's some of the East Coast and mainly in Europe.
Mainly in Europe and the East Coast. He's currently in a show right now at the Rijksmuseum called Raw Truth. And he's in a show, I think they have 6 paintings in the exhibit, and they've hung the show in dialogue with Rembrandt. And so we get to see Frank Auerbach and Rembrandt together. If you're at the Rijksmuseum in the Netherlands, you can see them paired together. But we get to see them here in town, or get to see Frank's work here in town. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity to see his work. Because you're right, you might see his work in New York or in London, but not that often, probably in this part of the country.
And when we say a contemporary figurative painter, Auerbach is a figurative painter, but at first glance it might look a little more abstract because the figure is there. You have to somewhat look for it, but what is really wonderful about his work is these big, thick brush strokes that are part of his work.
Well, he's an interesting painter, and he's got a very interesting process, and he's known for painting and repainting and scraping out and repainting the painting sometimes over a period of years. And I think even you can tell by looking at this painting that it's gone through some of that process. He works with models. They come and set for him. He's got 3 or 4 or 5 models that come, and they've been coming to his studio for 10, 15, 30 years and sitting for him the same time every week, again, over this long period of time. So he's developed a rapport with them over the years. And he has a very, you know, like you said, a very interesting process of working, adding and subtracting over a long period of time. I think they're really beautiful paintings. And he thinks of it as working and working, sort of rehearsing to that moment when he can call a painting finished, which I think is really very interesting. He's also known for this work ethic. He works 7 days a week, all day, and he gives himself 1 day off a year away from the studio. And so he's just someone that is sort of, I guess it's in his blood. I guess paint's in his blood.
Now, it's interesting because some of the other artists sort of have that feeling of adding, subtracting to the final work that's a part of this. Are there a couple other artists in this show that sort of use that same technique, but maybe a little differently?
Well, I think the first person that comes to mind is David Stern. He's a German artist. He's been in the States, I think, since the mid-90s. And, again, another artist that's very physical with the material. I had a chance to visit his studio a few years ago, and he actually makes his own paint because it's so expensive. So you could see his table where he had all of his pigments laid out, and he was, you know, would make his paint just to save on the expense of the material.
And we should mention that his works in the show have this huge, heavy impasto. I mean, we're talking three-dimensional You know, it's the paint is almost leaping off the plane at you.
That's right. I think you actually, in some of them, you see the paint before you find the image.
Yes, true.
There's one, particularly the self-portrait. It was nice at the opening. I was watching people, you know, in the gallery, and younger folks and older folks would come up to the painting, and they just couldn't find it. And then somebody would get a clue. Oh, this is where it starts. Here's an eye. Here's a nose. And then they would find out, oh, stand back 20 feet. Squint your eyes. You know, then the image starts to emerge. But I really like that sense of time in a painting, you know, a painting having a chance to unfold. You know, you don't get it maybe in the first instant, but the more you spend time with it, it rewards your gaze, and I think some of his paintings are really quite nice.
There's a couple of works by them, and both of them have that very heavy impasto, and if you walk up to it close, you're going to say, oh, this is abstract.
Right.
And you literally do have to step back for the image to come somewhat into focus.
That's right. And, you know, they have a physical presence. I mean, I love paintings that weave together paint and imagery sort of simultaneously. It's about the paint, the image, the artist and the model at the same time. And Stern's paintings are a wonderful example of that.
Now, there's another artist that uses also similar heavy impasto. I'm trying to remember here which one it is. Is it
Cedric?
Cedric Huckabee.
Right.
Now, tell us about Cedric Huckabee, because that name's not very familiar.
He's a young guy. He's probably the youngest artist in the show. I think he's in his 30s. He's from Fort Worth, and I know he studied on the East Coast, and he's returned to Fort Worth to teach. I think he's at the University of Texas of Arlington. I think that's right. Cedric's a wonderful young artist and very prolific as well. He's known for his figure paintings, his portrait paintings, and these large paintings of quilts, and abstract paintings inspired by designs in quilts. So he's a very interesting artist, but the human figure and the portrait is a part of his regular studio routine.
Now, on these particular portraits, at the edge of the canvas, it's two-dimensional.
Right.
And what happens is the paint builds up, and it mounds, in a way, around the image of the figure. And the figure is incredibly figurative, and it's almost a tactile sort of experience. You want to touch it because it is built up in the middle, and it's almost three-dimensional.
You're absolutely right. And I think you're thinking of one, the self-portrait in particular, that it almost becomes an object or sculpture on the wall. And he's found something. I think it was called cellulose or something like that. He's added something, or he's developed the surface of originally with the cellulose clay, or found a way of mixing it with paint to develop it. But it does start to take on a three-dimensional form and have a sculptural relief quality on the wall. That one in particular, I think, is a beautiful one, the self-portrait. You look into the darks, the flesh tones, and the way you shift from warm to cool and warm to cool, and the way he pulls those colors out around the head and brings them back inside. And then, again, in particular, that one almost has a relief quality. You feel almost the three-dimensional nose there that's present. But I really love that painting quite a bit. He's got a couple of paintings and a drawing in the show. There's one around the corner of his daughter, I believe, and that's another one that's very richly painted. And I love the earthy colors in that one, too. And there was one next to it called Angela. It's these beautiful, subtle tones, and I think it's a gorgeous little painting.
Yeah, and several of those have the 99% subtitle, so this is kind of like how the rest of us are living, and sort of there's a little political message to it. You know, it's how you're getting by day.
I think so. I was talking to him not long ago, and he was telling me about this project, and I think he did a group of paintings together, 99 paintings, and put them together on a wall, and it was called the 99%, and I think this are paintings of people from his neighborhood, from the supermarket, from the barber shop, you know, the people you run into on a daily basis. And I think it's great the way he's incorporated ordinary folks into his studio.
Yeah. The pencil drawing is really interesting because you get a sense of that. You were talking about how that adding and subtracting, and the pencil drawing really shows that part of his process as it is a part of Frank Auerbach's, because you see numerous, I mean, it's almost an amalgam of drawings put together to create the drawing, the final drawing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful drawing with standing figure, and it seems like it's even mixed media. There may be pencil or ink, or and it may be, was it on vellum? I'm not even sure. It was on an interesting surface as well, but that was a beautiful drawing as well. I had asked all the artists to ship me four paintings or three paintings and a drawing, and some of the artists did send works on paper, so I was really happy to see that. I think it's so often in galleries, we don't really get a chance to see drawings. We just see paintings. So it's nice to see what they're doing with their their drawing sensibility as well.
And especially when an artist is somewhat more abstract, even in a figurative sense, to see the draftsman quality and you say, oh, this is where we began and this is where we end. So, you know, you sort of see the process a little better. You can see the skill and talent in the process.
Right. I enjoy showing my students this Frank Auerbach drawing. In this particular drawing, they showed stages. And there's about 50 stages of the drawing. So he comes in each day, wipes it out, and redraws it. The next day, wipes it out and redraws it, wipes it out and redraws it. And in this particular drawing, he had worked on it so long that he'd drawn a hole in the paper. So he had patched paper over the hole and then continued the drawing. But again, that's just part of his particular process.
My guest today is Mark Lewis, Applied Associate Professor of Art. He is also the curator of Painted Faces, which is on display at the Zero Center for Arts and Education through April 20th. It features the work of 10 contemporary figurative painters, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, let's talk about one of the artists I really enjoyed, and that is the artist Michael Anonian. He has about three or four pieces in this, and again, it is a very textural surface, but this is incredibly figurative. And what I really loved is his positioning of his subjects on a couple of them, because they're not in the center of the canvas. They're off to the side, sort of angular positions. And what I also liked was he just captured a sense of who they were in a really, really interesting way.
I think so. The one that we put on the announcement of the postcards called Miriam, and it's a beautiful image, and it's and you were talking about positioning of the head, for example, in this one. And I really love, it's like her, there's sort of a thrust to the axis of her head, you know, like running from her shoulders through her neck to her head, so it's like leaning up and over a bit.
It's almost like a defiant look.
Yeah, it's a beautiful gesture, though, and it seems like a very human gesture. So it doesn't just look like her. I mean, you feel, like you said, you get a little feel for the attitude of the person and their posture in the pose. And I just think that's an absolutely beautiful painting. It looks like some of it's done with the brush, some of it may be done with the palette knife, so he's sort of drawing in, scraping on paint, drawing in, scraping on paint, slowly building the image. And I think most of the artists work from life. I think most of them have models. Mm-hmm. And I know Michael does in particular. And the same is true with Cedric, and most of the artists in the show work with models.
Now, in the case of the two that I was talking about where they're positioned sort of angularly to the canvas, it was Miriam and Logan. These
right.
are like, you know, one is like a lower right,
yeah.
another one's like lower left or upper left or something like that. It was almost like they're supposed to be companion pieces.
And that's the way we hung them, because I thought the way her head was positioned thrusting up, and then his head, the painting next to it sitting in the bottom right-hand corner, became sort of like a circular movement between the two paintings. And I thought that established a wonderful dialogue in the exhibit itself. Having those, first of all four paintings on that wall, but those two paintings in particular, I think, had a particularly sort of nice conversation going on.
Yeah. One piece from a distance looked almost Chuck Close-like. And when you get up close to it, you see, oh, it has nothing to do with that. But it has almost, it fades out of focus far away, and it comes into focus up close, which I thought is sort of the opposite of what you usually expect to see in a gallery.
Yeah, I don't know, but his work's really quite wonderful, and I think he's probably underrepresented in the art world. Most of these artists I've sort of discovered through serendipity. You know, I found Anne Gale's paintings in the back of an office in San Francisco about 15 years ago. It was an art gallery, but it was hanging on the back wall. I think I saw Michael's work maybe in New American Paintings. I saw David Stern's paintings first in one of the art magazines, like Art News or something, mm-hmm. something like that. I think I can't even remember where I found Cedric's work, but I think it was might have been New American Paintings also. And I've been familiar with Susanna Coffey's work for 15 years or so, and I think I saw her the first painting I saw that she'd made was in the Art Institute of Chicago. And so it's just been nice to discover these painters and to bring them to town to share them with the community.
Now, there are two works by Suzanne Coffey which really caught my eye. One was I think one she calls Green, and it's a portrait, but it's like a overdramatic portrait of a person, but he's literally coming out of a jungle. He's surrounded by leaves. I don't know if he was a gardener or if this is there's some sort of statement about the person, or if it's just a cool looking image.
Well, it's a cool looking image, and I think one thing that's fairly consistent, a lot of her images are self-portraits. You might mm-hmm. be surprised to find that, but sometimes that They're sort of hidden, you know, in a way. You don't know that it's her, and sometimes it seems like she doesn't show things that might, so that you might immediately think that it's her,
yeah.
And even by her clothing or what she might be wearing for a particular painting. But she's become actually fairly well known for doing self-portraits.
Ah, so that's it. So she's hiding her gender.
Yes, no, that, and that's become a part of her work as well. And I also like the one, I forget.
Is it Rest Stop?
Yeah, Rest Stop, the night painting. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. It's such a quiet, somber painting. And you go in closely, and again, in the dark, you finally start to discover these nice little subtle shifts of warm and cool colors. And then there's right on top of her head just a little flick of the brush that describes the hair, you know, sort of along her hairline. I just think it's a beautiful painting. And it's a challenging problem, painting yourself at night or in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, I thought with the title, I thought it was a portrait of someone sleeping in a dark room.
Very well could be. Yeah, you're right with all those titles, a little mysterious, you know. And the third painting she has in the show, it seems like it was Potion. What was the name of it? I've lost track of it too, but it's the one that's very linear.
Oh, yes. It was a series of arcs.
Yes, yes. And that works, I think, very, very new for her. That's something very different. I think as her work continues to develop, it seems like each painting starts to take on a life of its own. And so it's like she starts with one idea, and through the process of working, through that dialogue and the act of painting, that she'll end up in a very distinct place with each painting. And I think that's pretty exciting. So she sent us three paintings, and they're all very different. The one you talked about with the greenery, the one that almost feels like the night painting, and then this one that comes out of this linear rhythm. It's really quite appealing, quite interesting, quite beautiful.
And that's called Sharon's Potion's Breath.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was a wonderful, wonderful tile and a very curious painting.
Yeah, just a whole bunch of these arcs that are turned into almost like a geometric interweave, if you will.
Absolutely. I think you actually do feel the sort of the weaving of the paint in that one.
No. Now, for people who know the Kansas City Institute of Art, one of the painters there, a longtime teacher, Wilbur
Newald.
Yeah,
that's right.
It has several pieces. Now, these are what I would consider fairly traditional contemporary portraits in a way.
He's a curious painter, and I have to admit that I studied with him some years ago at the Kansas City Art Institute. And he's a wonderful perceptual painter. And I think what probably people don't know is that his early paintings were abstract, and they sort of started with Mondrian's trees. I don't know if you're familiar with those paintings, but Newald's early paintings are really quite abstract about brushstrokes, sort of a structuring of the brushstroke relating to nature. And then the longer he worked, or as he continues to work, he's in his 80s now, I think he's 88, that he's become more and more perceptual. But Andrew Forge described him as a disciple of Cézanne, and I think that's really an appropriate title for Wilbur. He's a wonderful painter. He's still painting away.
But if you actually look at these people, these probably owe more to like a Finnish Sargent painting.
I
mean, they're very finished. And what was really interesting, though, was that there's this, maybe it was just my reaction, but there was a peculiar vacancy to the people. That's just my reaction, but it was like there was nothing there to these people.
Well, that's very curious, but because I've met some of the people that sat for him, and I know he's a perceptual painter, and it may be that gaze, Rich. If you sit for somebody for a month or two, you may have a certain gaze that you adopt after a while that's a little bit distant. Maybe that's what you're sensing, is that sort of distant gaze.
It's very quite possible. Robert Bauer is another one, which very wonderful photorealistic portrait painter, but he has this very stylized thing where his portrait subjects, the eyes do not meet the canvas. I mean, the eyes are all downcast, sort of giving a sense of humility, and he's working in different meetings, everything from a pencil drawing to tempura to oil, but uniformly the eyes are looking down and not looking at you, the viewer.
I'll have to take another look at them. It's so nice to talk to someone else about what they see in a painting, because that can open up the painting for each person that's viewing it. So I'll have to go back and take another look at the eyes and think about that.
Oh, well, the first thing that caught my eye was that, you know, they're not making eye contact
at all.
That's very
interesting. Now, he's someone I probably know the least about, but I really like his work. And I know my particular taste goes a little more to the painterly side, but I just think he's a wonderful realist painter. And we have one, the one that's the oil, I think the title's Bronlin. I think it's just a beautiful, intimate little portrait. And it's the artist's wife.
Yeah, and that one, it was very intimate, but again, the eyes were looking down. They're looking straight
down.
That's
curious.
The eyelids are down. Yeah.
Well, that's very curious. Maybe there's something about, you know, it's so intimate, you know, sitting and looking at someone eye to eye that there's just something so strong about that people tend to gaze away just a bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very curious.
My guest today is Mark Lewis, who is curator for the Zero Center for Arts and Education's latest exhibit, Painted Faces, which is on display through April 20th, featuring the work of 10 contemporary figurative painters. Some have had connections with the University of Tulsa School of Art, others not. But one I'm going to talk about next has Ruth Miller, who's been through at least once, I think, as a Mayo painter here at the university.
She was... it was so wonderful to bring her work to campus several years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago now. And it was, I had talked to her recently, and she said she had been painting the head some, been painting the portraits some lately. And I was curious, so I wanted to see what she had been working on.
Now, remind me what her work was. Was it outdoor scenes, it seems like?
It seems to be more landscape and still life. That's more what she's known for, is really still life, as a still life painter.
Mm-hmm.
So I was intrigued, and I'd seen some of her figurative drawings before, but I was wondering what she was doing the painting. And a couple of them are a little older, but one of them was definitely from last year, I believe. And it was so nice to see, you know, again, what she's been up to. I think she's a very interesting painter. I know as I was inviting artists for this exhibit, I was talking to Susanna Coffey on the phone, and I said, well, I'm going to include Frank Auerbach and Ruth Miller, and I named a few people. And she goes, well, if Ruth's going to be in the show, I'll be happy to be in the show. I'm excited to be in the show with Ruth and some of the other artists. So she's a very well-known painter in artist circles, and she lives in Connecticut. She's still actively painting, still doing some teaching at the Studio School in New York. And, I mean, there's a kind of simplicity about them.
It's almost a sketchy quality is what I would call it. But it's nice and finished in its own way.
And she has such a warm hand and such a warm touch. They seem very immediate but sort of incomplete at the same time. I know some paintings you'll sustain much longer, but I know one in particular, I think it was the painting of Sandra, seemed like it was probably from a sitting or two. Very, very, very immediate and very direct, but very beautiful. I mean, it's the colors in that painting, the warms and the cools, and the greens and the reds in that painting are just really quite beautiful. But to me, there's kind of a breath to her handling of the paint, a kind of warmth. And I love the directness and the sense of volume in her paintings. They're very beautiful.
Yeah. One other artist we haven't talked about, I think you alluded to her earlier, Anne Gale, and I'm really interested in her technique because you were talking about how you were inspired by Auerbach's, you know, adding and subtracting. It seems like that's a big part of her process as well.
Oh, I think those are beautiful little paintings. To me, they continue to unfold as I go to visit them. I like the idea of call and response in a painting. And there's this one called, I think it's Portrait with a Grid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm immediately attracted to some of those neutral cools in the face. And then those set up by these little warm touches of, you can feel the brushstroke, the little warm touch of the brushstroke. So you feel like one group of colors sets up another group of colors, sets up another group of colors, sets up another group of colors. And you get this sort of dialogue in the painting process. So you feel... you can feel her sense of touch. You can see or sense her making decisions in time. And we get to enter into her painting dialogue, her way of executing the painting. And I love the way she weaves the painting together. Yeah, I think you probably noticed, like, the contours on the side of the head are almost non-existent. And she weaves the colors and the brushstrokes from the background through the face. So there's a kind of openness across the surface, and also establishing a volume in the head. So it's a beautiful weaving of paint in those particular paintings.
Now, what I observed about the grid itself was the fact that the subject was wearing like a big window pane check shirt.
Right.
But was there a grid that was a, you know, the hidden grid that artists often use?
Well, I don't know if it was that formal, but as you look through the rest of the painting, scanning up and down and across, you do sense that. But I think that's just sort of the directional nature of her mark making. But I bet the idea for the title comes from the shirt that she was wearing.
Yeah.
And I think that may be a self-portrait as well.
Yeah. And what I really noticed about her work was that, you know, there's a portrait there, but it's somewhat obscured because there's swatches of paint over it, and it's like you're sort of obscuring the image a little bit, but the eyes always come through. That was really what struck me.
It's so subtle, too.
Yeah, the eyes are just like they're there and perfect. That's the one thing she doesn't mess with, but yet it is subtle, as you mentioned.
It's very subtle, and you feel the presence of the eye. I mean, she's not going to make the mistake of thinking literally about the white of the eye and making it jump out of the head, you know, at you. But I think it's beautiful the way she constructs the painting. I think it's beautiful the way she established volume. And I love her, the artist hand in that painting, really in all of them. But those three paintings in particular, I think her sense of touch is really quite wonderful.
And the artist we haven't talked about is Clifton Peacock. What I really liked about it was he had just this bright color, and especially putting a person in profile, too, in the hero painting.
Well, this was another painting that I discovered at our local collector's home. And I went through his collection of several nice paintings, and I'd seen the Auerbach and thought that'd be a great addition. And Clifton Peacock's work is another artist that I've discovered years and years ago, and I've always enjoyed seeing his images jump up some one place or another, on the internet or in a magazine or wherever. He seems to be a wonderful artist, a wonderful serious artist. And so I thought, well, it tied into the theme. He's another wonderful contemporary artist. It's a little bit older painting, but I think it's a nice addition to the show, and it's a kind of a fun to have the profile view of the head. I think it's called Hero.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I think is really interesting about this show, I think a lot of people that sort of like art but really don't follow it very closely, they're going to say a portrait show, oh, that sounds boring. and the whole thing, and I know it's not, but the whole thing is there are so many different, there's everything in motion, just like in the rest of art with portrait painting.
Absolutely. I think these are all wonderful painters. You should come down and see the exhibit. A wonderful group of voices together. I mean, I was thinking about a range of voices when I was picking artists for the show. I think if you like the more physical, sort of painterly type of painting, you're going to enjoy it. You find some artists you enjoy the show. If you like something a little more for the realist side, you're going to find something you like. But I have to admit, Rich, these are all painters I really love. I was really excited to pull them together in an exhibit.
Were you surprised by the reaction? Did you like the reaction the people went at the opening?
Yeah, it was really very nice. And I had several nice comments and I think many people appreciated the exhibit, and I think they'll continue to do so.
All right. Painted Faces is on display at the Zero Center. Mark, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Mark Lewis is an applied associate professor of art at the University of Tulsa and curator for Painted Faces, which is on display at the Zero Center for Arts and Education in the Brady District through April 20th, featuring the work of 10 contemporary figurative painters. For more information on the exhibit, visit utulsa.edu/Zero. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online to listen to on demand anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just find Studio Tulsa and you can look through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.